Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
It's Devin Nunes. Welcome back for part two of the Roger Kimball interview. You can follow him at Parler. You can also join the New Criterion and Encounter Books that we talked about just a few days ago. Roger, it's great to have you back because on this episode, we're going to talk about the broadsides that you're doing at Encounter Books that I've written one for and the purpose of it and the history of it. I think it's fascinating and it's much needed in today's times because what's happening on the internet, the World Wide Web, is a sewer for left-wing activism. We've had kind of the big tech oligarchs have been putting pressure on the big corporations with the big government left wing that's essentially collapsed the openness of the World Wide Web. It makes it very, very difficult for someone like the New Criterion, my guess is, or Encounter Books, very, very hard to get picked up by the tech oligarchs anywhere. Yes. People are not going to find it. What drew me to the broadside was, is I knew one thing, and that was that if I can get something small, easy to read, that really encapsulates the last 4 years of things that have happened and get that in the hands of the American people so it's not going over the internet. And I thought I had developed something that was a new concept. Roger, I didn't realize that you had actually been working on this for a few years.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Yes. And also, by the way, it's a technology that's centuries old and it was used not only the beginning of this country, but also in the United Kingdom. So talk to us about the broadside, its origins, and how you picked it up in Encounter Books.
Right. Well, you know, the broadside, originally, it was a big sheet of paper, and they were used for advertisements or political proclamations, all kinds of public notices. And very soon, and it goes back to the 17th, even the 16th century, I think, but they played a really important role in the American Revolution. That's what piqued my imagination. And oftentimes they would be folded several times to make little booklets. And I thought, I think we published our first broadside in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, and we've done almost 70 of them now. And the idea was, as we say, one of the mottos is, you can read them in a sitting and come away knowing the best you can hope for and the worst you must fear. So what we wanted to do was find a way to we wanted not simply to comment on what was happening. To publish a book, it takes many months to get a book out. We wanted to be able to turn to writers who really knew a subject, have them write it very quickly, and get it out as quickly as the current printing technology and distribution technology allows. And my thought was, people would walk into a Barnes & Noble bookstore or a bookstore at an airport and see them stacked up and so on, and that we would be able to intervene in the debate, not just comment on the debate. Well, partly because of the process you were describing, that didn't happen. The owner of one of the big airport chains walked into a store and saw a bunch of broadsides, and he noticed that the name of Barack Obama was featured prominently and not particularly flatteringly on the covers of some of them. And he ordered that they no longer be ordered. So we found that it was uphill work, but they've been very successful. And for example, we published, I think, six or seven just in the last couple of months on various aspects of the coronavirus, or what I like to refer to as the CCP virus, the Wuhan flu. We published things about our reaction to the coronavirus. We published things about the economy. Andy Puzder, the great businessman, wrote about how we can get America back to work. Brian Kennedy, who used to run the Claremont Institute, this is a very recent one, talks about China's the Chinese Communist Party influence.
Hold it up just a little bit higher, Roger. So there you go.
And you see these are very small. This one is just I think 50 pages or so. But it enables us to get the word out very quickly. People can put them in their pocket. They become very effective. And we, you know, we do all sorts of things. This one by Betsy McCoy called The Next Pandemic is really about how we should prepare for the next pandemic. There will be one eventually. The great Molly Hemingway wrote one about the media and Trump. So it's all many subjects, but they're all focused on matters of you know great public policy importance today. And we found these pamphlets that we started off with the broadsides have been very effective. So we republished Michael Anton's great Flight 93 essay together with his response to his critics. Many people hated Michael Anton's piece. I think it was the most brilliant essay on the run-up to the 2016 election. And, you know, his image of, he said that, you know, it's like we're in the cockpit of United Flight 93, and our only option is either to storm the cockpit or die. And we might die anyway, but that's our only chance.
And Michael Anton, just for those folks that don't know, he was early on, he was in the Trump administration.
Yes.
But he was I don't know if he was afraid, but there was a small group of people that were writing very sophisticated essays that were kind of in the blogosphere out there through 2000, I'm guessing late 2015 and all through 2016. But they didn't want to be attacked because these are people that had high paying jobs.
Yes.
They were very,
yes.
You know, they had, we talked a little yes. bit about the Never Trumpers last week that, you know, so yes. I think they were very nervous to not tell their friends that they were supporting Donald Trump for president.
Yes.
And so
yes.
they wrote some very effective essays. And Michael Anton was one of the main writers. I forget what he called himself.
He called himself Publius Decius Mus, who was a Roman general. Livy talks about him, and the incident that Michael had in mind was that the two Roman generals before a great battle both had the same dream in the battle the next day, the general who one of the army's generals would die and that army would survive. So what Decius Mus did is when he saw the battle going against him, he donned his purple cloak, ran into the fighting and was killed. But the Roman army won the battle against the Samnites. And so that was what Michael had in mind. But you're absolutely right, Devin. He wrote under a pseudonym because at that time he was working for a financial firm in New York City. And which was a woke financial firm, you know, whose board had plenty of people who were had been in the.
He would have been fired, whether he admits
this
or not. He's a brilliant guy.
So Bill Kristol, if I may use that name, he blew Michael Anton's cover, and he was then promptly fired.
I didn't know he actually got fired.
Yeah, but just as Michael Anton's book on the run-up to, I think it was published on Labor Day or just after Labor Day in 2016, that was was the most important essay of that election. And I'm predicting, Devin, that your essay for our Broadside series called Countdown to Socialism will play a similarly invigorating role in the 2020 election to wake all.
Well, you're very, very kind. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I thought that all I was trying to do, Roger, was I just wanted to get the hell away from the tech oligarchs, the tech tyrants and the mainstream media. And I wanted to get something that was very easy for people to read, larger print, a few pictures that, you know, I'm not an artist, but I came up with the concepts and we hired a great artist to do some of the work that people could read quickly. But also, I wanted to keep the cost way down so that you're not paying, you know, $35 for something. I wanted to actually do something where if you wanted to spend $35, you can get five copies and you can give to all your neighbors.
Yes.
I mean, Encounter Books is a nonprofit. So clearly my goal was to get this cost down really, really cheap. And you guys are doing that. You can actually buy five copies for $30, I think.
I believe that's right. I believe that's right on our website. Yep.
And my whole goal is back to the broadside and back to this early technology is I want people to be able to get those, read them, and pass them on to your neighbors or buy a bunch of them and give them out to your friends and family so that we can get around these tech oligarchs. I don't know if we have enough time or not. It's very, very troubling because one of the points that I make in the book is that it's not just that people are being poisoned. I don't have my cell phone here now, but I like to always hold my cell phone up and say, you know, people are walking around like zombies and they don't realize that it's not just that 90%+ of the content that's being developed by the media is left-wing and being done by left-wing activists that are essentially no more than the propaganda arm of the Democratic Socialist Party in this country. That's only half the problem. Now, and this is what's really new in the book, it's about this filter that is filtering to those devices that people are carrying. And it takes that 90% of content and it moves it up to 99.9% of what you see on your phone are coming from people that are propaganda artists for the Democrat Socialist Party.
Absolutely right.
That's really what the book's all about. And, you know, thank you for your kind words, but it's very, very easy to read. And, you know, it'll be coming out in a few weeks. And I'm glad you were there to be able to do that and have an opportunity for really me to put this out.
Yeah, we're really pleased. And I hope people appreciate the fact that we deliberately chose red and yellow, that it's got a red background and yellow lettering, just like Mao Zedong's Little Red Book, but with, of course, the opposite intent.
Right. It's mocking the Chinese Communist Party. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it really is extraordinary that the extent to which, I won't say an interest, but a kind of that people have been seduced into thinking that socialism is a good thing. It's not. It's wherever it's been tried, it's been a recipe for the immiseration of people. And it's mind-boggling to me that people are taking it seriously now. And now, with this gargantuan tech, as you say, filter, that where, you know, you type in something, you're searching for something, you know, Google will, using their algorithms, will pre-choose what you can see. You know, it's really quite extraordinary. And, you know, I'm just so glad that you wrote this book. It's very
well. And even Amazon is also problematic, you know, because everybody has an Amazon account. It's a great company, except that the ownership and the people who write the algorithms are left wing lunatics. And I don't know if they actually believe in socialism or they just like being controlling the levers of power, which is really what's behind this ideology. It's about controlling the masses. So clearly, if you're one of the richest men in the world, you own the Washington Post, you get away with all this stuff. And I didn't even realize what a ripoff it is. Like if you write books, you're a book publisher, I mean, you don't make any money off Amazon at the end of the day because they're the ones that are really profiting off of it.
It gets harder and harder. The margins get thinner and thinner. Yes, that's true.
And not only that, you're essentially talking to people that don't exist when you're communicating with them. So if you go on Amazon right now, it'll say, you know, my book's not available till, I don't know, the end of September or something, which is totally nuts because it will be available. But what I'm trying to do, and I think what EncounterBooks.com is doing, not only can you get the book immediately when it's going to be available and be shipped directly to you, you're cutting out Amazon. Plus, we're giving you this where you could buy five of them at a time. I could even buy more if you wanted, but you'll never be able to do that at Amazon. So anyway, it's
EncounterBooks.com. That's where you can go to get it. Yes.
And on the broadside,
pre-order it today.
My guess is, and I don't know if you've looked at the history on this, but the term broadside is a naval term.
Yes.
And in your kind of background and research, is that where this term came from?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. A broadside refers to a simultaneous, cannon barrage from one side of a ship. Mm-hmm. That certainly was in the back of my mind. Was it? I think actually broadside was originally a kind of corruption of broadsheet, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But certainly in my mind and in the mind of the people writing in the 18th century in the colonies, I think that there was a connection between a naval broadside and the kind of polemical writing they were engaged in, the Federalist Papers, the Tom Paine's Common Sense, the Anti-Federalist Papers, for that matter. These were, you know, these were pamphlets. They would appear in newspapers or, you know, pass around in very cheap editions, and they changed people's minds. I mean, the reason that the a prominent reason that the revolution happened was because of these pamphlets.
Yeah, and that was actually because the development of the printing press, at first only big governments, probably kingdoms and dictators at the time of the time, you know, they were the only ones that could afford the original printing presses. But by the time that technology improved through the 16th century and the 17th century, so it's almost like kind of like the World Wide Web, but over several hundred years. So by the time you get to the 18th century, the mid to late 1700s, printing presses are readily available. And so it's easy to produce these pamphlets, these so-called broadsides, and get them out to the masses.
It's no accident, as our Marxist friends like to say, that Ben Franklin was a printer. That was his first sort of job. And, you know, he printed a lot of political stuff. And, you know, it was a great heyday of cheap newspapers. But it's, you know, this is, we like to think of the encounter broadsides as I say, intervening in important debates about issues that are, you know, really tremendous concern to people right now. I mean, I believe that this election is the most important of my lifetime. And the course of this election will determine, I think, whether America continues to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, or something else entirely. A lot is at stake. And I think that A Countdown to Socialism, your broadside, really outlines a lot of the threats that we face.
Well, I'm just glad you were there to that somebody was there with this concept already, so that I didn't have to just do it, you know, on my own. You know, thank you that I had invented something new. I should have known better. But I will tell you, Roger, just as we go through to try to help people, the American people, learn that you cannot trust what's out there on the World Wide Web. It's why we promote Parler. It's why many of you may be watching this on Rumble, because it's an alternative to YouTube that's owned by Google. Same is true. It's very unlikely that any of the mainstream media are going to, you know, even talk about this book, because, you know, they even ignored my last book that I wrote 11 years ago. They ignored it. I want to just close with this little story that I think is kind of funny. And then I have a final question for you.
Okay.
So I think you were shocked, you know, in the Countdown to Socialism, I write that, you know, I'm very critical of Republicans, including the White House, for even talking to these mainstream media outlets, and they should not be talking to them. And so I thought it was kind of funny a couple of weeks ago when we were working with some of your PR people about, because you know, you have access to, you know, you promote your books to all the media outlets, anybody who will write them. But I think you guys were a little shocked that I said, no, I'm not interviewing with those people.
Right. No, you're probably right. I mean, they're it's a lying bunch of people. We try to get the word out as far, you know, as far and wide as possible. But, you know, what you say reminds me of a comment that Bill Buckley, William F. Buckley Jr., once made. He said, you know, liberals are all for, you know, hearing alternative points of view to their own. And then they're shocked when they discover that people do have opinions that differ with their own. And that's really where we are now, that there's this kind of, people talk about diversity, but they actually foment a cultural situation where we're living in an age of incredible conformity, incredible intellectual conformity. And, you know, I don't mean to flatter you, Devin, but I, you know, you really have been a beacon of light in your public service. You know, most people, when they hear the term public servant, they scoff. But you actually live up to that title.
Well, you're very, very, very kind. So we're going to close out this podcast. Obviously, you can go to thenewcriterion.com, encounterbooks.com. You don't have to go to Amazon. But Roger, one of the things that I like about you, when you're not participating at the New Criterion and you're not doing Encounter Books, you actually have a very interesting hobby and background that I have myself. So a lot of people that know that I grew up farming. I still farm today. I had a grandfather that had grapes, and I've always been interested in the wine business. And in fact, I'm a small owner in some very small wineries here in California. but you have the same hobby and you actually write in your spare time. You evaluate wines, and how on earth did you get into doing that, and where can they find some of your writing at?
Right. Well, I just fairly recently became a wine critic for the Spectator USA magazine. And so people can go and look at my writing there. But when I graduated from college, I actually started a small wine importing company with a couple of friends. And it lasted for maybe a year. We actually did bring some wine in, but I discovered that the wine importing business was a little rougher than I had originally envisioned. So I got out of it. But I formed that very critical component of the wine industry as the consumer. It is fun to write about wine. And so I'm absolutely delighted to have this opportunity to do it. Spectator USA, it's on the web, and you can also, it's a magazine you can buy in print or see it on the web.
You're like a Renaissance man, Roger. So thank you so much. This has been a great week for the podcast. Roger, I hope that you'll come back on at some point.
Terrific. Love to.
Because I think people have really, really enjoyed this. I know I have, and maybe we'll have you for an entire show just on wine. You know, we did that last year over Thanksgiving. I interviewed a local brewery here in my district. Yeah, where we talked about how he got into beer making and the different types of beers, which I learned a lot. So maybe we can have special show just on wine that you and I would enjoy.
That'd be fun.
Thanks again. This is Devin Nunes. We will catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams. Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. First trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We, the people, free and strong, fight through the dark night toward the dawn. Freedom marches on. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Pay paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.